Hello everyone, Philip Carter here. This is a short story called Tardigrade from my upcoming book, Seven Stories, about time travel. Now my last book, Who Built the Humans, hasn't got audiobook treatment. In fact, none of my books have so far, for budgeting reasons. But I'm finding my way around that. I'm going to maybe launch a Kickstarter for the audiobook for Who Built the Humans. Same might be true of this. But anyway, here's Tardigrade. On June 28, 2009, Professor Stephen Hawking hosted a party at the University of Cambridge with an exclusive guest list. He was not looking for a particular set of names to invite, but a particular type of person. Only time travellers from the future were allowed to attend. Hawking enforced this rule with one simple trick. He sent out the invites long after the event had happened. Therefore, the only people who could learn about the party were people who existed after the event. Anyone who existed before the event wouldn't know about it, and anyone observing the goings-on inside Cambridge during the event would be blissfully unaware that one of humankind's smartest, kindest minds was sat quietly in a brightly lit room at that precise moment, waiting with balloons and drinks for travellers from the future. It's important to note at this point that I've had a slight allergic reaction to something whilst in Manchester, so it's not going to be great quality, but I need the practice. Professor Hawking moved under a banner in the room which read, "Welcome, time travellers." Upon the table were snacks and champagne. A film crew for the Discovery Channel were taking photos and filming, some of them no doubt half expecting a traveller might show up. Everything was going according to plan. The invites were already printed, ready to be shown to the world after the event. "You are cordially invited to a reception for time travellers, hosted by Professor Stephen Hawking, to be held at the University of Cambridge, Gonville and Chaos College, Trinity Street, Cambridge, location 50 degrees, 1221 North, 0 degrees, 74.7 East. Time, 12 o'clock. 28th of May, 2009. Sorry about that. For some reason, Professor Hawking, that's the real invite, by the way. For some reason, Professor Hawking put it in American time. So I thought, there's not 28 months in the year. And that gets me every time. I might actually reverse it in the final story and have a footnote. No RSVP required. The grandfather clock in the corner ticked its way to 12 o'clock. The door did not budge. There was no knock. Another 10 minutes. No knock. Another 10, then 20, then 30. The film crew stayed with Professor Hawking, but even fellow professors or curious passers-by who may have caught wind of this secretive party before it was held neglected to show up. The champagne grew warm as the universe tried to balance its energy with the energy in the rest of the room, and indeed the rest of the universe. Most of the food went uneaten. The balloons began to deflate. Slowly but surely, Professor Hawking had waited over an hour for nothing. Eventually, the party ended, and the human race carried on. This unusual experiment was remembered as a joke for a few centuries, but after a while its memory faded. What Professor Hawking and the film crew could never have known was that a time traveller had actually indeed arrived, but due to unforeseen circumstances beyond their control, they were rendered incapable of making their existence known. Yeah, so you don't get many preambles with me, but you're going to get a midamble, which is a word I've just invented. I just said actually and indeed at the same time. It only says indeed in the text. I don't know why I did that. Anyway, time holes were hard to maintain. For macroscopic objects, such as humans, to pass through, a tremendous amount of energy had to be expended on a hole. One easy way of minimizing this energy requirement was to make the small hole, was to make the hole smaller than the human. It was, after all, a tear in space-time, a wound which required constant energy to maintain. The bigger you made one, the more energy it needed. Conveniently, the largest time hole possible for future humans was only slightly bigger than a tardigrade. It was a hole that basically didn't exist, and so in a tardigrade went. But tardigrades cannot read English, nor can they communicate meaningfully with gigantic physicists. And even if they could, They make terrible conversation, and only ever talk about sex and algae, like that weird vegan poet who works in town and smells suspiciously like fried chicken. So, the tardigrade got an upgrade. It became an upgradigrade. The upgradigrade was treated to a precarious operation that opened up its insides and placed a very small, very sensitive microchip inside its hemocell. That's the bit where its veins, lungs, and potentially hearts would be, if it needed or indeed wanted any of those things. But it didn't. A tardigrade is a simple creature, small enough to wiggle its nutrients around without those otherwise important transport hubs. It would be an ideal drug mule, if only it were a few thousand times bigger. Nutrients get around a tardigrade's anus, stomach, esophagus, nervous system, and brain, organs listed in order of importance according to a human I just met, just fine without needing tubes. The microchip would absorb and save information about its environment, and if possible, open up a line of communication with a nearby telephone, so as to text Professor Stephen Hawking, or someone else in the room, to say, "Hello, we manage time travel, but it only works for tardigrades." The upgradigrade was prepared in the future at the tip of a needle, where an insomniac scientist slash sculptor had crafted its tiny chair on one of their days off, then ushered it gently into a state of cryobiosis like an elderly relative. The tardigrade shed 97% of its water, ushering in what might be the worst, tiniest hangover in history. Now entering what is known as a TUN state, the tardigrade began creating its own antioxidants. This was not a feature of the human-made upgrade. Tardigrades already did this for some reason, which made them perfect candidates for travelling across warped space-time, which was liable to snap and release immense bolts of radiation at any second. The antioxidants provide a valued defence against the radiation. The needle was pushed into the tiny time hole, and a tiny gust of air, sterilised so as not to flood the year 2019 with future diseases such as the moon wigglies, was exerted from within. The upgradigrade left the future and began its ridiculous journey into the past, much like a middle-aged man having a mental breakdown and buying lots of Lego. The journey was not instantaneous. Indeed, another reason it would be impossible for humans to make the trip was because it would take just as many years to get back through time as it took for the past to grow up into a big boy called the future. As the tardigrade was sent from a date approximately 1,000 years after 2009, we lost a few years due to the wars on Jupiter. A time machine would also need to preserve its human occupant somehow, or even go as far as to become a generational starship for an entire tribe of travellers. Simply put, it would not work. The entirety of what remained of human civilization simply did not have the resources or the energy to open a time hole that large in space. The time part was arduous enough. A tardigrade was a perfect time traveller in every which way. He, this traveller was a male, not that it's relevant, could survive the immense radiation storms of backward-leaning, bendy-wendy space-time. He could fit on the tip of a needle small enough to enter the tiny time hole. He could freeze up and dry up and survive centuries without nutrients. This part was admittedly untested, but the last tardigrade had lasted a few decades in outer space in the 2100s, so it was worth believing, especially since this tardigrade was a direct descendant, or at least claimed to be. Lastly, this tardigrade could come back to life with as little as a few molecules of water, or champagne, if he landed right and Professor Hawking wasn't in the way of his trajectory. And so, the years began to pass, forward and backward, and forward again. The human race of 2009 grew into the human race of 3,000 and something. The upgradigrade fell through time in the direction of a longer way yesterday, each day taking a day to pass, but in reverse. To him, it hardly would have felt like time travel at all. He would almost die and come to life again at the other end of a strange and incomprehensible journey. For the upgradigrade tardigrade did not know nor care about his mission. All he knew was that he was hungry and wanted to eat, and then have sex with something, and then go to sleep. In this way, he was perhaps more human than whatever weird freaks he had left behind in the future. A lot happened to humans in the future, but we aren't talking about them right now. We'll leave them behind in the future, where they belong, the disgusting animals. The upgradigrade awoke inside a droplet of champagne from a recently opened bottle. He had arrived. He exited his tun steak gleefully, mooching around inside the droplet for a female. Too small to be drunk on the alcohol, the tardigrade instead poured around in a sloppy stupor simply because that was how he lived his life, and who are we to judge? The radiation from the time hole quickly eroded the thing and it vanished, not that anyone would have noticed. Next, the tiny droplet of champagne arced toward the edge of Professor Hawking's wheelchair. The upgradigrade tardigrade spiraled downward in his boozy starship. Both tardigrade and kindly human genius were blissfully unaware of each other's presence. The droplet landed, barely missing the professor's suit. At this particular moment in time, the upgradigrade was thinking about eating a nice bit of algae. He crawled sluggishly out of the remains of the droplet, operating now under the instruction in the microchip in his hemocell, in the same way you might operate under the instruction of the robot crabs that live in your bones, if there were robot crabs that live in your bones, which for legal reasons, there aren't. The little upgradigrade tardigrade scurried, from his perspective, into a patch of air from which he could begin his broadcast. From here, he might have seen the words on the banner in the room, the time on the grandfather clock, or the ingredients on the side of a champagne bottle. But he didn't, because he can't read. The microchip began its tiny broadcast, looking for mobile phones in the room. He didn't find one. Something must have been blocking the system. The scientists had prepared for the radiation from the collapsing time hole itself, but not for any spikes generated in a local area, or indeed a closure of local phone networks. Perhaps it was the architecture of the building, a heavy cloud, or a disgruntled anti-time paradox tardigrade crew in black suits and sunglasses sent across from Area 51, but something was stopping the upgradigrade from communicating. But it was fine. The tardigrade had no idea what was going on anyway. He didn't care. He was hungry and horny. The microchip just kept pushing on with its signal. Nothing useful happened. Later, the upgradigrade tardigrade would stumble upon a female of his species and attempt to procreate with her, engaging in tiny foreplay and watching as she seductively detached her previous skin layer, between which and her new skin, she would place her eggs. At this point, they would get close, and he would ejaculate onto the eggs. Later, they would fall asleep together. The tardigrade would smoke a tiny but imaginary tardigrade cigarette, and his girlfriend would think about the last man she had round. Later still, when our time-travelling upgradigrade friend had left without leaving his details, the female tardigrade would discover that his sperm was worthless. His genetic material would die with him, just as the scientist intended before they sent him on his way. He lived a happy life going around pretending to reproduce with many women from the uncivilized past of tardigrade culture, because tardigrades develop a culture in about 1,000 years or so, and tardigrade people in the past are filthy. Tardigrades never told us about that, our culture, before we sent them back through time. Why would they? We're basically weird-shaped planetoids that speak so loud we shake the viscous atmosphere around them, even when we whisper. We are cosmic horrors to them, freakish, endless things which lollop around with only four arms and stage horrid alien abductions of tardigrades, only to stick strange machines in them and throw them through irradiated time holes. Even if tardigrades could speak to us, do you think they'd want to? Anyway, the party went on without a little tardigrade time traveller, and the universe carried on as usual. Meanwhile, outside Gonville and Chaos College in Cambridge, various shapes and styles and sizes of time travellers appeared and disappeared, each with differing opinions on whether or not they should intervene with this party at all, or even exist. Each erased the last from space-time before being erased themselves by the next, or the previous, or the adjacent traveller. It gets complicated. Travellers and anti-travellers smashed into each other outside, time machines warred in private psychic battles with ancient artificial minds. A man was beaten half to death in a nearby toilet just because he looked like a time traveller, but he was just wearing silly shoes. Unknown gods and horrors were unleashed, laser beams streaked across the skies, the sun was extinguished and relit, and nobody actually noticed because it all happened so quickly that it barely happened at all. Also, they were all pissed on the champagne. And then you read this story and heard about it, which is a shame, because people aren't supposed to know about this time-travelling tardigrade. Oh well, I guess you had a good life. So that was Tardigrade, And there's multiple reasons I read that out. The first one being, I need the practice. The second one being, I'm up at 6 a.m, which I'm not usually. And the reason I'm up at 6 a.m, instead of being nocturnal, is that I actually set an alarm for myself so I could do some shopping for Christmas. And the other reason, the proper reason, is that improv, seems to be the core element of my being. Like, I do a bit of improv comedy on the radio at the moment with Fab Radio International every 7 p.m. on Monday, if that interests you. And that's a lot of fun. So I did that last night. So I've noticed that improvising stuff certainly helps me create a better story. So some of the lines there you'll notice aren't in the text because I made them up on the spot. And they'll probably wind up becoming part of the text now and then getting improved, maybe chiseled away a bit and then improved again. And that's kind of the process. So basically, if any aspiring, I don't know why you'd call yourself aspiring, because if you write, you're a writer. But if any writers who self-identify as aspiring are listening, one, you're not aspiring. You already are a writer. Believe in yourself. And two, it's really good to improvise. You know, it's good to plot things out. But I've noticed a lot of people get burnout who do that. And I believe it's genuinely because you set yourself these really regimented goals and you get stuck. It does work for some people, obviously. Everybody's got different brains. But sometimes as we're growing up and we're learning about the creative arts, we'll see somebody, perhaps somebody famous, maybe Stephen King has said, I do it this way. And he's never said everybody else should do it this way. But people who look up to him have at some point decided that they should try it that way, and maybe you'll get stuck into it. So basically just chill out, find your own rhythm, improvise. If you have the time, if you've got a story or a poem, read it out loud to yourself. Better yet, read it in a pub. You'll get very quick, very brutal feedback in a pub, unless you go to like an artsy one, in which case it's hard to get feedback unless you specifically ask for it, because people are really nervous about offending each other these days. So I have to, which is why I go, because you know, they need balance. Anyway, I'll end on that perhaps fictional note. But yeah, I've enjoyed improvising that. And if anybody's got any voice acting they want me to do, I would love to do that. It's one of the several jobs that I'd love to do. Like if I could make money doing voice acting, I'd be set for life. Same with working in a bookstore. That's also something I want to do. Maybe a toy store, actually. Something in between. Somewhere that can sell Lego swords and books at the same time. That's what I'm working towards. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the short story Tardigrade and the 5-minute post-amble at the end of Tardigrade. Yeah, please comment below if you liked it. If you've got any tips, or if you... Actually, here's a good idea. If you've read one of my stories before and you want to get an audio version of it for free on this newsletter, tell me. Try not to make it a massive one, though. Actually, yeah, you challenge me. Make it a massive one. Any story you like, tell me to turn it into an audio story, and I'll do that by next month. So, yeah. I shall talk to you all soon in the comments. Goodbye.